Greetings, listeners and friends of RAOTC. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia, saying welcome to this broadcast for August 2020. I am Bruce, VK3UV, and the major part of this bulletin is being recorded mid-July 2020. We are still in containment with the coronavirus, but until all restrictions are removed, please remember to keep safe distancing at all times. Now, I'd like to thank all of our volunteers who have helped with the relaying of this broadcast. This broadcast is relayed on a number of frequencies on the first Monday of the month, except for January. The transmissions emanate from many different sources, and the actual times and frequencies may be found on our website, www.raotc.org.au. We are continuing transmissions on the Australia-wide VKDMR network on Talk Group 5 at 1100 hours VK3 time, and now we are also transmitting on D-Star on the Wednesday evening following the official broadcast on Reflector 91C at 7:30 p.m. VK3 time. The morning primary HS broadcasts originate in Melbourne on 160, 40 and 20 metres, as has been the practice since these broadcasts started. But with the current poor HF conditions and sometimes a lack of volunteers, the HF system has been a challenge to say the least. So we again ask members of all states, if you can spare half an hour once a month to assist us with these relays, particularly on HF, to contact me. We invite local club repeater operators to relay this broadcast to your local provincial areas. Again, if you can assist with either of these requests, please contact me via our website www.raotc.org.au or email me vk3uv@wia.org.au. Club news. Now here is our members' news, and we welcome Peter Mill, VK3ZPP, and he became full RAOTC member number 1788 on the 14th of June 2020. Merv Quinn, VK3ADX, became full RAOTC member number 1789 on the 29th of June 2020. Peter Alton, VK4VQ, previous call signs VK3ZIL, VK2YEI, VK2EPE and VK3KG. He became full RAOTC member number 1790 on the 2nd of July 2020.
In the interests of keeping you abreast of little changes, here's an article from Andrew Masterson in which it speaks about official changes to various things. From Monday, the 20th of May, 2019, the official definitions for several units, including the kilogram, the ampere and the kelvin, will change forever in what is being hailed as a fundamental revamp of the way humanity measures things. The date of the change, which will see the formal adoption by almost 100 countries of a new international system of units, SI, is not coincidental. It marks World Metrology Day, wherein metrology denotes the science of measurement. In one sense, the shift in the way units of measurement are defined represents incremental rather than radical change. After several years of research and international collaboration of institutes led by Germany's Physikalisch-Technische Bundesanstalt, PTB, has concluded that units of weight, temperature, substance and electric current are best defined in terms of the strict values of naturally occurring constants rather than by physical artifacts. The process began half a century ago when the official definition of a second was redrafted to align with the unvarying transition between two energy levels of an atom, moving away from the previous measurement, which involved the division of 24 hours by 86,400. The same principle was applied to the formal definition of a meter. In the 19th century, the universal meter was a length of metal comprising 90% platinum and 10% iridium. The measure was changed in 1960 and finally cemented in 1983. From that year, a meter was forever enshrined as, quote, the length of the path travelled by light in a vacuum during a time interval of 1,299,792,458 of a second, end of quote. The reason for this is clear. A lump of metal, no matter how well crafted, will change, albeit on a molecular scale, in response to external forces. The speed of light won't. It's the speed of light, one of the unwavering constants in the universe. From the 20th of May 2019, therefore, other units of measurements will also be based on natural events. To do this, researchers at the PTB and colleagues have succeeded in establishing or confirming fixed values in seven constants. These include the speed of light in a vacuum, which remains at the previous estimation for the definition of length, and, quote, frequency of the hyperfine structure transition of the ground state in the cesium-133 atom, end of quote, as the marker for a second. Planck's constant, which correlates photon energy with electromagnetic wave frequency, will be the fundamental measure for the kilogram. The elementary charge, the amount of electricity carried by a single proton, will be the basis of the ampere. The Boltzmann constant, the measure of the relative kinetic energy of particles in a gas, will underpin the absolute definition of the base unit of temperature, the Kelvin. The Avogadro constant will be used to formalize the measure of the basic unit of substance, known as the mole. The constant is used to calculate the number of atoms, molecules, or ions in a single unit. And finally, photometric spectral luminous efficacy, which describes the number of luminous units, known as lumens, produced per watt of power, will be drafted in to nail down the definition of the universal measure of light, the candela. The candela, by the way, until the changeover, is defined as the luminosity of a source that emits monochromatic radiation of frequency 5.4 by 10 to the 14th hertz, and is an approximation of the light given off by a candle fashioned from whale blubber. In the brave new world of constant-derived metrology, at least, no cetaceans will be harmed during the process of calculation.
The following item of interest was published in the Brisbane Times on the 5th of July 2020, and it is headed, Queensland Saves Radio Station Where Nation Learnt World War II Was Over. The former US Army receiving station that received the first message in Australia that the Japanese had surrendered, marking the end of World War II, has been added to the Queensland Heritage Register. The Birkdale station in Redlands sits on land that could have been cleared for 400 homes. Its role in relaying messages between the senior Allied troops in America, Japan, New Guinea and Australia was so vital, five-star US General Douglas MacArthur would even sleep at the very basic base. After escaping from the Philippines, General MacArthur conducted America's Pacific Theatre campaign from Brisbane, starting in March 1942.
Queensland Heritage Register staff recently inspected the nondescript Birkdale building. Debbie Best of the Queensland Heritage Council said the radio receiving station was a critical part of the US Army South Pacific campaign, giving General MacArthur a direct, swift and secure communications link with Washington DC. The family that owns the farm on which the station stands previously told Brisbane Times about hearing how it received the message of Japan's surrender. Ms. Best said few Queenslanders knew of its significance. Most people driving on Old Cleveland Road east at Birkdale will travel by the receiving station's unobtrusive driveway without realising they are passing one of the South Pacific's most important World War II communication centres. With a direct line to Washington, the receiving station allowed General MacArthur to communicate with the United States via encrypted teletype messages within minutes. That was a vast improvement on the time-consuming relayed Morse code that the radio network replaced. So important was the Birkdale receiving station, and so critical were the communications it handled, it is said General MacArthur even slept at the complex when the need demanded it. Messages were received by radio at Birkdale and then relayed via cable to General MacArthur's various Brisbane War offices. When constructed in 1943, the receiving station was 630 metres from the road, built on swampy ground to minimise radio interference, and secluded by forest. It remained in use as a radio testing site by the Commonwealth Government until 2017. Redland City Council bought the site in 2019 after it was flagged for sale in the 2018 federal budget to make way for 400 homes. Redland's Mayor, Karen Williams, said she was proud of her council's fight to protect the site and to have the portion of the radio receiving station added to the Queensland Heritage Register. Council has prepared a heritage management plan, which will be finalised now the decision of the Queensland Heritage Council is known. That will identify other features on the 80-hectare parcel of land that could also have heritage value. Local councillor Paul Bishop said he wanted to ensure the Quandamooka people's history was also preserved. "I look forward to this site being protected and many more stories being told about this remarkable place," he said. Added to the Queensland Heritage Register are the single-storey brick radio receiving station, the operations rooms and the domestic headquarters. The centre's remaining antenna array, the single-storey concrete generator building and the service yard between these two buildings and the access road to the Old Cleveland Road East have also been added to the register. Ms. Best said the radio receiving station was one of the last remaining World War II radio links between the US and Australia. There were many other military radio installations during this time, including at Rocklea, the Redland Bay Golf Course and at Hemant, she said. However, the Rocklea and Redland Bay infrastructure is long gone, and the building at Hemant, which resembled the Birkdale building, was converted into a private house in the 1980s. And that article was printed in the Brisbane Times on the 5th of July 2020. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia Incorporated.
Shortly after recording the article about a new American initiative to find Magnetic North, I came across another article relating to this subject, also in Cosmos magazine. This article is written by Phil Livermore and John Mound, both of those gentlemen associate professors of geophysics at the University of Leeds. The article is entitled "Why the Earth's Magnetic Poles Could Be About to Swap Places and How It Would Affect Us." The Earth's magnetic field surrounds our planet like an invisible force field, protecting life from harmful solar radiation by deflecting charged particles away. Far from being constant, this field is continuously changing. Indeed, our planet's history includes at least several hundred global magnetic reversals, where north and south magnetic poles swap places. So when is the next one happening, and how will it affect life on Earth? During a reversal, the magnetic field won't be zero, but will assume a weaker and more complex form. It may fall to 10% of the present day strength and have magnetic poles at the equator, or even the simultaneous existence of multiple north and south magnetic poles. Geomagnetic reversals occur a few times every million years on average. However, the interval between reversals is very irregular and can range up to tens of millions of years. There can also be temporary and incomplete reversals, known as events and excursions, in which the magnetic poles move away from the geographic poles, perhaps even crossing the equator, before returning back to their original locations. The last full reversal occurred around 780,000 years ago. A temporary reversal occurred around 41,000 years ago. It lasted less than 1,000 years, with the actual change of polarity lasting around 250 years. The alteration in the magnetic field during a reversal will weaken its shielding effect, allowing heightened levels of radiation on and above the Earth's surface. Were this to happen today, the increase in charged particles reaching the Earth would result in increased risks for satellites, aviation, and ground-based electrical infrastructure. Geomagnetic storms, driven by the interaction of anomalously large eruptions of solar energy with our magnetic field, give us a foretaste of what we can expect when a weakened magnetic shield occurs. In 2003, the so-called Halloween storm caused local electricity grid blackouts in Sweden, requiring the rerouting of flights to avoid communication blackout and radiation risk, and disrupted satellites and communication systems. But this storm was minor in comparison with other storms of the recent past, such as the 1859 Carrington event, which caused aurora as far south as the Caribbean. The impact of a major storm on today's electronic infrastructure is not fully known. Of course, any time spent without electricity, heating, air conditioning, GPS or internet would have a major impact. Widespread blackouts could result in economic disruptions measuring in tens of billions of dollars a day. In terms of life on Earth and the direct impact of a reversal on our species, we cannot definitely predict what will happen, as modern humans did not exist at the time of the last full reversal. Several studies have tried to link past reversals with mass extinctions, suggesting some reversals and episodes of extended volcanism could be driven by common cause. However, there is no evidence of any impending cataclysmic volcanism, and so we could only likely have to contend with the electromagnetic impact if the field does reverse relatively soon. We do know that many animal species have some form of magnetoreception that enables them to sense the Earth's magnetic field. They may use this to assist in long-distance navigation during migration, but it is unclear what impact a reversal might have on such species. What is clear is that early humans did manage to live through the Lachaume event, and life itself has survived, and hundreds of full reversals evidenced in the geologic record. The simple fact that we are overdue for a full reversal, and the fact that the Earth's field is currently decreasing at a rate of 5% per century, has led to suggestions that the field may reverse within the next 2,000 years. But pinning down an exact date, at least for now, will be difficult. The Earth's magnetic field is generated within the liquid core of our planet by the slow churning of molten iron. Like the atmosphere and oceans, the way in which it moves is governed by the laws of physics. We should therefore be able to predict the weather of the core by tracking this movement. But like we can predict real weather by looking at the atmosphere and ocean. A reversal can then be likened to a particular type of storm in the core, where the dynamics and magnetic field go haywire, at least for a short while, before settling down again. The difficulties of predicting the weather beyond a few days are widely known, despite us living within and directly observing the atmosphere. Yet predicting the Earth's core is a far more difficult prospect, principally because it is buried beneath 3,000 kilometres of rock, such that our observations are scant and indirect. However, we are not completely blind. We know the major compositions of the material inside the core and that it is liquid. A global network of ground-based observatories and orbiting satellites also measure how the magnetic field is changing, which gives us insight into how the liquid core is moving. The recent discovery of a jet stream within the core highlights our evolving ingenuity and increasing ability to measure and infer the dynamics of the core. Coupled with numerical simulations and laboratory experiments to study the fluid dynamics of the planet's interior, our understanding is developing at a rapid rate. The prospect of being able to forecast the Earth's core is perhaps not too far out of reach.
Here is an article from the IRRL, which was submitted to us by a committee member, John Treisman, VK3XM. And it is headed, Newer Solar Cycle 25 Forecast Runs Counter to Consensus. Scientists associated with the National Centre for Atmospheric Research and other institutions are offering a bold prediction on how Solar Cycle 25 will play out. In a paper forecasting sunspot cycle 25 amplitude, they assert that the next sunspot cycle will be of major proportions. The forecast stands in stark contrast to the consensus of forecasters who predict that the magnitude of the nascent cycle 25 may not be much different from the current unremarkable solar cycle, which appears to have reached its low point. From the dawn of modern observational astronomy, sunspots have presented a challenge to understanding their quasi-periodic variation in number, first noted 160 years ago, stimulates community-wide interest to this day. The abstract points out, a large number of techniques are able to explain the temporal landmarks, geometric shape and amplitude of sunspot cycles. However, forecasting these features accurately in advance remains elusive. The paper notes that recent studies have illustrated a relationship between the Sun's 22-year Hale magnetic cycle and the production of sunspot cycle landmarks and patterns, but not the amplitude of the cycle. Using discrete Hilbert transforms of 270 years of monthly sunspot numbers to robustly identify the so-called termination events, landmarks marking the start and end of the sunspot and magnetic activity cycles. We extract a relationship between the temporal spacing of terminators and the magnitude of sunspot cycles, the abstract explains. Given this relationship and our prediction of a terminator event in 2020, we deduce that sunspot cycle 25 will have a magnitude that rivals the top few since records began. This outcome would be in stark contrast to the community consensus estimate of the sunspot cycle 25 magnitude. According to the paper, low amplitude solar cycles appear to correspond with widely separated terminators, while larger amplitude cycles correspond to more narrowly separated terminators. Our best estimate for the sunspot number amplitude of cycle 25 is 233 spots, with a 68% confidence that the amplitude will fall between 204 and 254 spots. We predict with 95% confidence that the cycle 25 amplitude will fall between 153 and 305 spots. The researchers concede that their forecast is outside of scientific consensus, based on different paradigms. Over the coming months, as solar cycle 25 matures, it will become evident which of these paradigms is most relevant, the paper says. Very early indications of the spot pattern are appearing at higher than average latitudes. Historically, high latitude spot emergence has been associated with the development of large amplitude sunspot cycles. Only time will tell. And that item came from the ARRL, submitted to us by our committee member John Cheeseman, VK3XM.
Right, we now come to that joke. Now, this is a true story. A woman was flying from Melbourne to Brisbane. Unexpectedly, the plane was diverted to Sydney. The flight attendant explained that there would be a delay, and if the passengers wanted to get off the aircraft, the plane would reboard in 50 minutes. Everybody got off the plane except one lady who was blind. A man had noticed her as he walked by and could tell the lady was blind because her seeing eye dog lay quietly underneath the seats in front of her throughout the entire flight. He could also tell she had flown this very flight before because the pilot approached her and, calling her by name, said, "Kathy, we are in Sydney for almost an hour. Would you like to get off and stretch your legs?" The blind lady replied, "No thanks, but maybe Max would like to stretch his legs." Picture this. All the people in the gate area came to a complete standstill when they looked up and saw the pilot walk off the plane with a seeing eye dog. The pilot was even wearing sunglasses. People scattered. They not only tried to change planes, but they were trying to change airlines. Have a great day and remember, things aren't always as they appear. A day without laughter is a day wasted. This now concludes our session for this month. And all being well, we shall be back with you on Monday, the 7th of September 2020. A reminder, if you want to contact us, please do so via our website, www.raotc.org.au. This is VK3OTN, the station of the Radio Amateurs Old Timers Club of Australia, saying 73, and listening now for any check-ins and callbacks for those relay stations that have an operator available. Thank you.